Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
So let me start with a question for our listeners, for each listener. If you're a copywriter and you're itching to build a business, what should you do? You probably have many options. But if you'd like to know whether building your own agency is the right way to go, we have some valuable information for you today. Our guest is Andy Strode. He has built two agencies. The first one, Fireworks Creative, grew from 2 to 30 people in 5 years. Andy and his partner sold the agency to a large company called Cognicase. 6 months later, he started another agency with one partner and one employee. That agency is called Context Creative. After 15 years, the agency had grown to have a staff of 28, and Andy sold his shares to his partners and returned to selective freelancing. But he wrote a book about what he learned in 20 years of starting, managing, growing, and selling two agencies. And I don't have the physical book, but I can show you the cover on my Kindle, on my iPad. It's called How to Start a Creative Agency. And of all the people I know, Andy is the one to write that book. And Andy's going to share some of the lessons and secrets today, right after I remind you that copy is powerful and you're responsible for how you use what you hear on this podcast. Most of the time, common sense is all you need. But if you make extreme claims, and or if you're writing copy for offers in highly regulated industries like health, finance, business opportunity, you may want to get a legal review after you write and before you start using your copy. My larger clients do this all the time. So Andy, welcome, and thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Appreciate being here. Looking forward to speaking with you.
Yeah, so I've never worked for an agency. I know people who have. I have the cliched vision of Mad Men from the 1960s. I imagine it's not much like that. Maybe it is. I don't know, in a few places. But let's start with a basic question, if we could. What's the difference between being a freelancer and having an agency?
Well, first of all, having an agency, in sort of the way I see it, is you have employees. So there are many people now, they say they have an agency, but really they're freelancers with a bunch of people they'd like to work with on and off. And I used to work that way when I was freelancing too. So it was a distinction between freelancing, working with other people in whatever arrangements made sense, and having an agency where you had employees. So the difference is, assuming you have an agency, it also assumes you have more business to keep all your employees busy. That means you have a payroll to meet, so it's not just you. You have expenses. If you have an office, you have those expenses, of course. We had offices, so this was before the pandemic, before work from home became as popular as it is today. We had offices, so if we had 30 people, that means we had 30 desks, 30 nice ergonomic chairs, 30 computers, networks, all that. So our monthly overhead, aside from salaries, was also substantial, right? So if you have an agency, be ready for that. Secondly, if you form an agency, either by yourself or with somebody else, you are the boss. So some people are not comfortable being the boss. It's up to you how you want to run your place, how you want to direct your employees, how you want to relate to your clients, how you want to work together. Each agency has its own feel and vibe. That's set by the boss, and that's you. So a lot of people don't want to do that. They have enough on their hands at just taking care of themselves, and that's as far as they want to go. So that's the big difference.
That's a great description. I appreciate it. And it leads right into my next question, which is, who is having an agency for, and who should avoid it at all costs?
Yeah, if you're just most comfortable working by yourself, if you think of yourself as an introvert, you're not really that comfortable in groups of people, you're certainly not comfortable telling them what to do, it's not for you. who should start one. I freelanced for 6 years. The reason I decided to start an agency is I got so busy, I couldn't get any busier. So then it was up to me, either I turn down work, give it away to other people, or find a way to accommodate it. And the way I found to accommodate it was to start an agency. I'm fairly outgoing. I have no problems talking to people, and I seem to have no problems telling people what to do either. So, hey, that's for me.
Yeah, perfect fit, it sounds like. So even, I mean, we're post-pandemic, but we're right in the middle of a Zoom age, or, you know, even with this podcast, it's not Zoom. Nathan has a much cooler software, but it's virtual.
Yeah.
So you have 20 years experience doing this. How important is it to meet with clients in person?
If possible. So I appreciate people work in different cities, different continents, etc. If possible, I think it's really important. It's like any other friendship. It's like any other relationship. You know, so just to back up a bit, my clients for the most part were in the city I live in, which is Toronto, Ontario, Canada. So it's a big city, lots of potential clients here. And so most of my clients were here. And we had lots of face-to-face meetings. Some of my clients who are mostly corporate, government, etc., they're used to, they want to start a project. They call in the partner. They want to have a meeting in their boardroom somewhere, and here's the briefing, and they come prepared with all their briefing notes, and it was a great way to start a project. So we got to know each other face to face. I call my clients my business friends. So, you know, I had clients for years and years, and I think it's important to develop those kinds of relationships where you see each other as partners. I always thought, two sides of the same coin. They had a project they needed done. I wanted a project. I could help them get it done. We're going to work together and get this project done successfully. That's how I saw it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I love that from the point of view of relationship. Let me ask you about from a couple of business sort of focused business perspectives on the same question. From a creative, functional content, you know, nitty-gritty understanding of the business and their goals, how important is the face-to-face?
I think it helps. It's more spontaneous. And often with my clients anyways, there was more than one person in the room. Sometimes there would be many, right? So I remember going to briefing meetings, and I assume I'm meeting with maybe one or two people, and I'd walk into a boardroom and there's 12 people around the table. I'm thinking, wait a minute, who are all these people, right? Yeah. And what are you doing here? I'll tell you who they were. Many of them were sort of project managers, or they were in charge of projects that had something to do with the project I was being briefed on. So they may have either wanted to offer input, or they just wanted to understand what's going on. So they would sit in on this meeting so that they were up to date for themselves, right? These were also potential future clients. That's the other thing about working for a big organization. Within an organization, we had sometimes many clients, right? It's not just one client at the organization, because internally they're divided into departments and into different responsibilities and so on. So I was happy to meet 12 people around the table, and I would make sure I got all their business cards if possible, just to remember later who they were, who were these people. And if they ever came up again, then I would know, oh yeah, that was the woman who sat in on this meeting, right? So yeah, you can have Zoom calls with, you know, I've been on calls and I've seen many, a whole screen full of little heads, right? This big, but it's not that spontaneous, right? It's very ordered. And in a meeting, you know, there's lots of opportunity for back and forth. Also, for some of my clients where it was more one-on-one, it got fairly personal too. So I would hear about things that happen in their personal lives, right? And we would talk about that. I would bring coffee to meetings. I have, you know, one story I tell in the book, I think. I had a client, they had office coffee. It was terrible. It was the worst coffee. I don't know. They should have got rid of that coffee machine or maybe cleaned it out or do something with it. I don't know. It was just awful coffee, right? So on my way to the office, I went by a very nice coffee shop. I would buy two coffees. And my client got to know that. So I'd come there with two coffees and we could have decent coffee together. It was just a nicer meeting, right? So,
sure. You know, you answered my other question partially. I said, you know, from a business revenue length of engagement point of view, how important are in-person meetings? And I, you know, certainly meeting other clients within the organization or future clients, potential clients was yeah. great.
So the other thing I just want to add to that.
Yeah.
What I said earlier, you know, personal meetings let you get closer to each other, right? So you know each other better. And you know, clients would phone sometimes if they had a question or something, you know, quick that can answer or whatever. But getting that close to a client, when they move, when they change jobs, which happens, you know, especially in the corporate world, often they take you with them, right? I got my best and easiest clients by having existing clients move to a new company or organization, right? I called that getting brought in through the side door. And that's sure. literally what happened, right? Rather than having to compete for their business, I mean, they would tell me in advance, oh, I'm leaving my job. So the first thing, you know, I need to know is who's going to replace you because I don't want to lose that client, right? And I don't want to keep working with that company. And then where are you going? And inevitably, and I would leave the ball in their court. I'm not going to hound them as they get to their new thing, but inevitably they would call me. Hey, you know, it's usually 3 or 4 weeks later. It takes time for them to settle in, figure out what they're doing. And then they would call me and say, you know, can you come in? And I remember going to one big company and again, it was a client who had moved there. She says, can you come in? I said, sure. And I thought it was for, you know, a dog and pony show, a presentation, present credentials kind of meeting. So we brought a portfolio, like a physical portfolio with us with stuff. We never opened it. It was a briefing meeting. It was a briefing meeting. We were brought in and based on her say-so, we were in. And we started a project. It was a six-figure project. It was like about $250,000. It was very successful. Led immediately to a follow-up project and became an ongoing client. And even today, they're still a client of the agency. It just keeps going, right? So you want somebody who's going to bring you in somewhere as a trusted vendor. And on their say-so, you're in.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's great. That's great. Great information and great advice. Let's get down to hammers and tongs.
Sure.
If someone's a copywriter and they've never run an organization before, they might be very extroverted. They might love to tell people what to do and they might love to work in teams, but they've never done it before. What are the business skills that they need to start to develop to run and own an agency?
So if they're a copywriter, my assumption is that they've been freelancing. Like, 'cause you could be a copywriter working at an agency having never freelanced and think you're going to start your own agency and therefore you have no business skills whatsoever. I think most people who want to start an agency probably are starting from the foundation of having been a freelancer, I hope. If you're a freelancer, you already learn a number of things. You learn to manage your cash flow and make sure you have some money. Hopefully you've learned how to get new clients and so on. But as you get an agency and you have more responsibility and you have a greater payroll, you have to take that up a notch. So my suggestion is always to get, you know, business advisors. If you're not an accountant, you are after all a copywriter, get an accountant. And not just to do your, you know, what they call year-end books, which are actually probably quarterly payments, but to give you business advice and to take you through your financials and help you understand. You have to become interested in financials. And if you're not naturally a financials person, find somebody who is and pay attention when they're talking to you. And learn how to plan and understand. The other thing is, you know, figure out what your agency is going to be about, or at least have a starting position. You might change your mind going in, but at least figure out what you want it to be and have some kind of a focus. These days, especially, the more focused, the better, right? Figure out where you can specialize in and become known for something. You can still be a generalist agency, but it's harder.
Yeah. Okay. Good advice. In other words, take the idea of branding and apply it to your own identity in the world, even if you go outside of the boundaries of what that branding seems to describe. Okay. Hard question though. What are the main reasons agencies fail?
Not keeping up with changes in communications and technologies. So if you go way back to Mad Men era, the Mad Men were doing mostly print and television advertising. Okay, so this was pre-internet. So the internet comes along. So there's a whole lot of agencies that went under there because they just didn't make the curve. The internet's going to be a fad. It'll be gone soon. And we'll get back to making our newspaper ads. And now, you know, here we go again, right? So then you got social media and now you got artificial intelligence and things just keep evolving and keep changing. So not keeping up with the times. Others fail, you know, all their eggs in one basket. They have one or two major clients. If they lose one, it starts sort of a death spiral. You know, they end up having to let go of people. And by letting go, you probably are going to lose your best talent. And now you've got an agency with not much talent and it starts to wear you down. The other thing is they have no plans for growth or for how they're going to end. In other words, they're not going to sell their agency and they're not going to merge it with somebody and it just closes their doors and they disappear because it's hard to sell or to transition these types of companies. And if you think about how law firms do it with the various partners and the junior partners work up and et cetera, so to keep the ball rolling while the senior guys leave, right? That's what you need to do.
When you have some copy and the performance of the copy is mission critical, who are you going to call? Not Ghostbusters. They don't do copy critiques, last time I checked. A lot of people, from the most advanced to the up-and-coming copywriters, reach out to me. I do copy critiques. One client, Brett Alcorn, has hired me 20 times. Yep, 20 times. That's because on the very first critique I did for him, he doubled his conversions on a video sales letter. Every month, I do a handful of critiques for GKIC members. These are copywriters and small business owners who are trained and experienced, but they need another set of experienced eyes to go over their copy to take it to the next level. One A-lister told me I go over copy like an IRS auditor. Now, I wasn't sure whether to take that as a compliment or not, but he assured me it was. He said I can find the one flaw or several flaws in copy that no one else was able to and make winning suggestions on how to fix them. So when you need a copy critique, just go to garfinkelcoaching.com and click on the services tab. garfinkelcoaching.com for a critique. Thank you. And now back to the show.
I'm going to jump in real quick, David, if that's cool. In the E-Myth, there's a story about a lady that bakes pies. And she's like, well, I'm sick of working for this owner of this business. I should start my own pie baking business. And then she starts the business and realizes she doesn't get to bake pies anymore. She has to do the books and she has to. A lot of times we think we want something, but we don't really understand what it entails. And then we end up in a position that we don't really want. Another example, Fantasia, Mickey Mouse wants to learn magic, wants to have the mop and the buckets do all the work for him. And then it spirals out of control. So understanding that going from a doer in the business to being a business owner is a huge thing that I think it's a incredible service that you're letting people know, hey, you're not just going to be a copywriter. You're not just going to be a content producer. You're going to be a business owner. And that's a totally different world and you need to be prepared for it.
That's a great point. That is so true. So in my case, I still did keep one foot in both, you know, sides. I still did do some writing, but we had copywriters on staff. And same with my partner was a designer. We had lots of designers on staff. So we were sort of like creative directors, if you will. But we were the face of it. We were the ones who went to the meetings. We were the ones who were responsible for the clients and so on. But it's a great point. Being a business owner and being responsible for other people and a bigger, you know, more business than you used to have, your role changes for sure.
Great. Thank you for that. Now let's talk about the guy who sells the businesses he built, which I think also is a theme of the E-Myth, build to sell. Yeah. I imagine you didn't build them to sell, but you probably had systems in place and you probably had standard operating procedures written down and things like that. But I don't know, maybe you didn't. I mean, you built two agencies, helped grow them and sold them, first to a large media conglomerate, and the second one you sold your shares to your partners. What were the most important lessons from that for you?
Well, in the first one, it was having something that somebody else wants to buy. It's as simple as that, right? So at the time, Fireworks Creative was probably in Canada one of the first really integrated agencies. So as the internet sprung up and became a commercial medium, there were a lot of internet agencies. And for the most part, that meant people who knew how to build websites, they weren't necessarily good at communications. Somebody figured out how to program, and now they became an internet agency. And their going in position would be, well, we'll build you the website, you give us the content, client, right? And a lot of clients, you know, just didn't work because they had nobody to give the content. They weren't good at writing content or creating content for online. They've never done it. And yet somehow these web agencies seem to assume that the clients would do that. We came from a longer background where we created all the content and then we programmed. So for us, the cart and the horse was the most important part was the content. Building a website, yeah, we'll find the right programming, using the right languages and platforms and so on. And so this became fascinating for some people. In fact, we had offers from two different organizations, one based in New York City and one based in Montreal, who are interested in buying us at virtually the same time. Both sort of came out of nowhere. And the fact that we could do this for clients and attract major clients was of interest to them. You know, that we would be incorporated into their business, they would take care of the clients and so on. In the second case, selling my shares to my partners, if you're going to start a business and you're going to have partners, you will by nature have a partnership agreement. And you want to be careful when you put that agreement together that it accounts for all kinds of possibilities. Either somebody wants to leave, which was in my case. So in my case, just so people know, I was about 10 years older than my partners. So it would make sense that I would be the first, you know, unless you want to sit in that chair till the day you die, which I didn't. It all made sense. Everything went in the right order, you know, and my partners continued with that. And I got paid out over a period of time, which is also easier on the business. You're not asking the business to come up with this huge lump sum at one time, which is a hard thing to do, right? So it's like I got a salary, in a sense, for a number of years, and I no longer work there. And for me, that worked out too from a tax perspective. You don't want to get all the money in 1 year. You want it spread out. So it works out on both sides, and it's very traditional. It's a obvious way to do it. But that's the kind of stuff, at least some parts of it, that you want in a partnership agreement if you have partners.
That sounds really good. So we've talked about the end. Let's talk now about the beginning for our people who are just looking at that. What are the most important first steps to take once you've decided for sure that you want to start an agency?
Figure out how you want to work. So in my case, when I started the agency, I knew I wanted a partner in it. I didn't want to start it all by myself, because when I had worked in agencies, and even in my freelance, I always worked with other people. So if you work in a traditional advertising agency, writers and designers were paired up into teams, creative teams. I always had that, and I enjoyed working that way. And everybody in the agency business just got used to working that way, and you could bounce ideas off each other and so on. So when I started the agency, the first thing I did, I figured out what I wanted it to be. I just wrote brain dumps and pages of stuff. And I started doing research and you know, how other agencies functioned and just had a look around. And so then I had a notion of what I wanted. And then I advertised for a partner. I looked around the people that I knew. There weren't people there that I thought would make appropriate partners. So I placed an ad. I got 30 responses, people [S2] Wow. [S1] Who thought they might want to partner with me. Most of them weren't, I could tell right away from the responses. Anyways, I met with five of them and I eventually chose one. And what I wanted was somebody to be an equal partner, 50-50. That means we both contribute to the starting of the agency. It also meant we both had clients. We were both freelancers. He was a freelance designer. I was a freelance writer. So perfect. We both agreed we'd bring all our clients into this new agency. So it's not like you're going to work for the agency and still have your own freelance clients. Everything that made sense to be in the agency became an agency client, which worked out remarkably well. And we were both responsible for the finances and the running of the agency. And that's what worked for me. So my first point, I guess, is know yourself. Understand what you're going for and how you want to work. Also, before you start, have some money in the bank. You need a financial cushion. Don't start, with no backstop, with no money in the bank, because, money is lumpy. Some months are really great, other months are not. You got bills every month, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's great. Let me mention your book again. I'm pulling it up here in my iPad. It's called How to Start a Creative Agency, by our guest, Andy Strode. And Nathan, do you have anything you'd like to say or add?
No, I just love this because a lot of times on the podcast, we talk about how to write better copy. We talk about how to be a better copywriter. But I know that a lot of copywriters out there are at least toying with the idea of starting their own agency. And so this has kind of been a neglected issue on the podcast. So Andy, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your knowledge with our audience, because it's one of the gaps that we've had in the podcast so far. So I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you very much. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, and we will make sure that in the show notes, we have a link to where people can get your book. And if people want to check out the show notes, they can go over to copywriterspodcast.com. And while they're there, we'd love it if you subscribe and leave a review on your favorite podcast app. And before we're out of here, do you have a website that you want to send anybody to?
I have a website for my book, and it's called creativeagencybook.com. And there are many, many blog posts there. People are thinking of starting an agency. There's probably some advice that might be helpful.
Awesome. We'll make sure to include a link to that as well. David, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll mention, I met Andy on Twitter. He has lots of good little nuggets, so you can follow him. Is it just
Strote Book, Strotebook?
So awesome. well worth, as you're doom scrolling, a little ray of sunshine in the day.
Doom scrolling on X. I've never heard of such a thing. All right, so check out the show notes over at copywriterspodcast.com. We'll have links to everything over there. And until next time, we will catch you later.
Catch you later. Thanks, Andy.
Right, bye-bye. Thanks.
Hey, did you enjoy today's show? Want to help get it into the ears of more listeners? Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
This is the Copy and Funnels Podcast Network.